As efforts to clean up the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico intensify, the people fighting the petroleum plume have a potential ally, oil-eating bacteria. What's more, the deployment of oil-eating bacteria has been touted in some circles as a preferred cleanup solution to the ecological disaster unfolding in the Gulf. We are joined now by Richard Snyder, a professor of biology and director of the Center for Environmental Diagnostics at the University of Western Florida. Welcome to our show.
I'm glad to be here.
Now, I'm speaking to you from somewhere in Louisiana, not in Florida?
Yes, that's correct. I'm over here for a meeting that's being sponsored by the Consortium for Ocean Leadership. It has NOAA, USGS, NSF, and academic scientists from across the Gulf Coast here to discuss the oil spill.
Are they talking about oil-eating bacteria?
Not so much. I think there may be two people here who specialize in bacteria, and I might be one of them.
So what are they? Are there many different kinds, and are they found in the natural world?
Yes, there are many bacteria that will eat petroleum. It is a natural substance. We have naturally occurring oil seeps, and most people are familiar with, like, La Brea tar pits out in California. That's an example of petroleum exposed at the ground surface. They're also exposed at the seafloor. Not all oil is below the ground surface. And since it's a natural part of the ecosystem, there are bacteria out there that eat these stuff and have enzymes to break down the oil. And that capability is quite widespread among a number of different types of bacteria.
Until this oil spill, the largest oil spill in North America was actually here in New York in Greenpoint. Should I assume that those bacteria are in Greenpoint right now, eating away at some of the oil?
Yes, I think that's a fairly safe assumption. I would suspect that any of your listeners could scrape up some of the dust off the floor in their house and find oil-degrading bacteria. They literally are everywhere because oil is not something that is rare in the environment. Most terrestrial organisms, we make oil. We have, you know, people complain about greasy hair and oily skin, and it's the same type of substance that is in petroleum. It's an oil.
Now, I normally think of petroleum as being somewhat toxic.
Yes.
Not for these bacteria?
Well, there is toxicity issues, and bacteria have different ways of dealing with that. It tends not to be as toxic to the bacteria as it is to higher organisms, and the bacteria tend to see it more as food. But the bacteria have a problem that beyond the toxicity really is getting to the oil, because, as you know, oil and water don't mix very well, and in order to make them mix, we use detergents, like when we wash our dishes. We get the oil and the grease to dissolve in the water, and that's why they use these dispersants, is to disperse the oil in the water. Well, a lot of these bacteria that eat the oil make their own surfactants. They make their own dispersants, and they can pull the oil molecules into the water, and then they can break it down with their enzymes and eat it. As long as it's in an oil mass, they have a hard time getting to it. So that's more of an issue than the toxicity to the bacteria.
Well, we'll get to the other kinds of dispersants in a moment, but are these natural dispersants, detergents, more effective than the synthetic ones we use?
Some of them can be, have been shown to be much more effective. The limitations are mostly in production, that these are products of bacteria and expressions of genes, and so you would have to set up bioreactors as opposed to commercial production, chemical production processes that tend to be a lot more efficient and more cost-effective.
Now, I have compost in my house and worms, and they're eating away at all sorts of garbage. I would have hoped that they would have produced the soil a lot quicker than they seem to be, even though they're they're working all the time.
Yeah.
How long does the process take when we're talking about these bacteria?
Well, it is temperature dependent. If it is warmer in the summertime, your compost pile will progress much more rapidly than it will in the wintertime. And that's one of the big concerns that I raised at this meeting here, is that we don't know what the degradation rates are for this oil. We know that a lot of the dispersed oil, the oil in the water, is at 4 degrees centigrade. It's at the bottom of the seafloor. It's near the seafloor where it's very, very cold. It's refrigerator temperature, and we put things in our refrigerator to keep them from breaking down, and that's going to be the case with this oil. It's going to break down very, very slowly because the bacteria are temperature dependent, and just like your compost pile is going to be temperature dependent. So the oil and the bacteria in the surface water where it's warm, they'll be able to degrade the oil much more quickly than the bacteria that are down in the bottom of the ocean where it's very cold.
Once the bacteria have degraded the oil, what's the end product of the process? There's always an end product, isn't there?
Yes, CO2. Actually, bacteria do the same thing that we do to the oil. They combust it. Aerobic respiration, which is what we all do. We take organic molecules and convert them to CO2, consuming oxygen, and bacteria will do just that with the oil. Now, there is
So that's a lot more carbon dioxide than we might want.
It will add to our carbon dioxide flux to the atmosphere, yes. There's a huge biological component to carbon dioxide flux on the Earth.
And then is this a pure process? Because oil is a very complex substance. Is it just simply everything gets broken down and turned into carbon dioxide?
Well, eventually it will, but there is as you say, it's a complex mixture. And there are molecules of different quality to the bacteria that are in the mixture of crude oil. There are substances that are very small, molecules that are very small and easy for the bacteria to break down and get the energy from them. There are other molecules that are much more large and complex, and it is more difficult for the bacteria to break those down. And those will tend to stick around a lot longer. They will degrade much more slowly. So, for example, if you put a piece of leaf lettuce in your compost pile versus an oak leaf, I would dare say that leaf lettuce would disappear a lot faster than that oak leaf. So things progress at different rates, and it depends on the quality of the substance. And some of the components of the oil will take a long time to degrade, and some of those do have some toxicity, so that is a concern.
My guest on Underreported today is Richard Snyder, professor of biology and director of the Center for Environmental Diagnostics at the University of Western Florida. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Let's get a little into the fantasy world and say that BP had figured out a way to cap the spill and no more oil was going to come out. How long would it take for this process to take before the Gulf of Mexico was relatively safe for fish and other animals?
Yeah, I wish I had a good answer for you on that one. It is a huge unknown at the moment. There is a massive amount of oil that is already in the Gulf. We don't know how far it's going to go, how long it's going to last, and what the ultimate effect of that is going to be. From Exxon Valdez, we know that the effects of these spills can last for decades. And we know that there is an immediate impact, an immediate toxicity to things like bluefin tuna that are spawning right now, that would be spawning in the area of the spill. Likely there will be no year class of bluefin tuna in the Gulf of Mexico because of this event, and any other marine organisms that have eggs and larvae where the dispersants in the oil or where the dispersants are being applied and where the oil is, we're going to see greatly reduced productivity in those fisheries. But the longer-term effects are much more harder to quantify, and a lot of it is a general subtle degradation of the environment that just is beyond our ability to actually grab hold of it and put a number on it, but we know it's happening and it's very disturbing. But we know that a lot of the immediate effects that we'll see will cascade into the future, and those are lots of unknowns that we're going to be watching for a while and trying to determine the extent of that.
Would it be possible to encourage the growth of these bacteria around the BP oil plume?
Yeah, that gets into problems of its own. One of the best things that you can do to help these bacteria is to give them some nitrogen and phosphorus.
Well, isn't there a lot of nitrogen and phosphorus already coming into the Gulf from the Mississippi as a result of agricultural runoff?
Yes, that is a problem over to the western side of the Delta where we have a low oxygen zone that limits fisheries over there. But some of the oil is getting over to that area. But the main part of the spill is not in the plume from the Mississippi River Delta. The bacteria, for the most part, in the open water are going to be limited by nitrogen and phosphorus. And we saw this in Valdez as well, where they applied nitrogen and phosphorus, the oil disappeared much more quickly. And your compost pile would likely go much more quickly if you threw a little fertilizer on it, too. The nitrogen and phosphorus will help these microorganisms attack the carbon. The problem comes exactly with what's happening with the Mississippi River Delta plume, is that when you put too much nutrient out there, you can get these dead zones. You get too much algae growth. It decomposes, and it turns the water into low oxygen conditions that make it unfit for most of our major fishery species.
Now, these bacteria occur naturally, but aren't there several kinds of genetically engineered oil-eating bacteria?
There have been genetically engineered bacteria and bacteria that they have identified the enzymes from and moved those enzymes around to other organisms. And for the most part, those studies have not had successful transitions to field conditions. You're talking about the open ocean. It's an extremely hostile environment for a bacterium that would ordinarily live very well in a culture flask in a laboratory. So the transition from that bioengineering to the environment is often a very difficult step and has proven to be a roadblock to a lot of bioremediation work.
And many people are concerned about setting any genetically engineered thing loose on the world.
Yes, that's certainly a concern.
Well, let's talk about the substances that are actually being spread around the Gulf right now, those dispersants you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
How are they usually used? Have they been developed specifically to deal with oil spills from wells in the water?
It is my understanding that the dispersants being used, they go by the brand name Corexit, and have been around for quite a while. It's my understanding that they are used in motor oils, like the detergent. You say detergent motor oil would be the detergent part, would be these surfactants. And they are stockpiled for oil spill use, typically small spills in harbors and bays where there's a fuel oil light spill. They can put some detergent on it and disperse it very quickly before it reaches intertidal habitats and shorelines where it can smother things and damage things. The big problem that we're facing, and a lot of the unknowns we're facing right now, is it has never been used on this scale. We're talking about 800,000 gallons of dispersant have been sprayed on the surface of the ocean, and equally unprecedented is the use of dispersants at the seafloor, where the oil plume's coming out of the pipe. It is going to be dispersing oil all the way through the water column rather than having that oil float to the surface where it can be skimmed up and collected.
Isn't it kind of toxic? What happens to the plant and fish life that comes in contact with this dispersant?
Yeah, the dispersants themselves have toxicity, just as your dish detergent would. If you put your dish soap in your fish aquarium, I dare say your fish wouldn't like that too much. It will dissolve membranes and things like gill tissue that are very sensitive membranes. The detergents will irritate them and in some cases destroy them. And when you talk about very small organisms, eggs and larvae and the plankton, the dispersants have a very toxic effect and acute lethal effect on those. But they also will, in dispersing the oil, make the oil more available to the bacteria that are going to break the stuff down. So it actually does two things through making it more bioavailable. By dissolving the oil into the water, it increases the contact with all these sensitive organisms and increases the toxicity of the oil in a short-term, very acute effect, but it also makes it more bioavailable to the bacteria that will break the oil down. So it's a double-edged sword, and there are lots of compromises in treating spills, like do you use fertilizers? Do you use surfactants? There are people that, for example, if there's an oil spill in a coral reef or a seagrass area, habitats that are subtidal below the water, they recommend not using dispersants because they want the oil to float over these habitats. But if your concern is more the intertidal habitat, like oyster reefs, intertidal oyster reef, or the marshlands around here in Louisiana, then you're worried about the surface floating oil coming in and just smothering these habitats that tend to be nursery areas for a lot of our fishery species. So there are trade-offs to it, and there isn't one good solution, I'm afraid.
And how are they used? Are they spread all over the affected area, or are they concentrated at the wellhead?
Yeah, they tend to, they're dispersed by airplane. Well, there is one source that is dispersed by one of the robots at the wellhead, and they're injecting the dispersant right into the oil plume. But most of it is being applied by airplane, flying over the spill slick on the surface, and they will target patches and long strings of oil. I heard one estimate of about 250 acres per plane flight that they cover.
About 10 days ago, the EPA asked BP to switch from Corexit to a less toxic alternative, but BP rejected that. Why?
I think it has to do more with availability of dispersant and effectiveness and probably some intransients as well. The EPA required BP to do a series of tests very early on for the use of dispersants, and I can't find out, but it is apparently EPA approved it and allowed them to proceed, and that's where we ended up using all these dispersants. And then recently EPA has decided that, well, maybe that wasn't such a good idea and have asked them to switch. But, you know, so I can understand where BP might be reluctant now because EPA is doing a flip-flop. That's something I don't understand. I cannot find that answer because EPA required DEP or EPA required BP to do these tests initially with the dispersant, and then they proceeded to use them. Whether they proceeded to use them without EPA approval, that should have been a red flag. If they did proceed with EPA approval, then EPA is later saying, well, no, now you've got to switch. So I'm not sure what that story is, and that might be a good topic to explore.
And as you said, it's never been used in such a large scale. We don't know about the effects of these dispersants, partly because that information is proprietary since the chemicals are patented.
Well, that's true, but there has been a lot of toxicity testing done on them. We don't know the exact formulations, but as a product, they are tested, and there's toxicity information on these. They, as I said, they've been around for a while, and there have been toxicity tests done with them, and they are fairly well-known substances. It's not like these are brand-new, mysterious compounds that nobody's ever seen before.
Some of the workers at the oil spill have reported flu-like symptoms. Could they have been caused by these dispersants?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I would hesitate to say yes. We do know that the fumes at the site are tremendous. A large fraction of this crude oil, it's called light sweet crude, and a large fraction of it is aromatic, volatile compounds like opening a can of paint thinner and can be just overwhelming. And we also heard reports of this coming from Exxon Valdez where workers were exposed to the volatile compounds and aerosolized compounds out of the crude oil, and it gets into their lungs and causes lung irritation and will cause those flu-like symptoms. So I'm suspecting, I don't know, I'm not a medical doctor, so I throw that caveat out there, but I suspect a lot of that is the aromatics from the crude oil itself that's causing those problems.
Well, the dispersants are going to be degraded mostly. They're there to aid the bacteria to transform the petroleum into carbon dioxide. But will some of it wash up on shore? Could they cause ecological damage analogous to what the petroleum will?
Yeah, that's a huge unknown. Because of the volumes that are being used, and we don't know what the degradation rates are. We do know that bacteria will degrade the surfactants as well as the oil. But with oil washing up here in Louisiana, I suspect a lot of dispersant is washing up as well, but it isn't necessarily being tracked. I haven't seen any data where people are tracking dispersants. It's hard enough to get tracking data, chemical analysis for tracking data of the oil alone. Most of the tracking is being done visually. They're just tracking what they can see. And that's a huge concern here at this meeting is coming up time and time again. We just don't know where the dispersed oil, the oil we can't see, where is that going? Because we know there's a lot of it out there, and a lot of that has surfactants in it. We just don't know where it's going and what concentrations and what effect it might be having.
Dr. Snyder, thank you so much for participating in today's underreported look at the oil-eating bacteria and the dispersants. Richard Snyder is a professor of biology and director of the Center for Environmental Diagnostics at the University of Western Florida.
Thank you for the opportunity to get some information out.